Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, the leaves. What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. And I scoured the world, I scoured the country, and I finally found my man, probably the number one fixed income guy in the country. But very smart when it comes to markets, has a great understanding of the world and what's happening in the world, and has got an opinion on some other things right now. Mark Levin, welcome back to the Bubba Show. What's up, brother?
Thank you, Todd. You know, I tell you, it's so much fun. I'm at a small investment bank boutique, and we have CNBC and Bloomberg blasting all the time. And every time you get on the screen, I yell over to everybody, pay attention. This is my buddy up here. And whatever he says, right or wrong, he has an opinion. He's strong in his opinion. And most of the time, it's the same. The scary thing is, it's the same opinion as mine.
That's true. And, you know, look, the one thing I always tell everybody is, you know, I get out there, I tell you what my opinion is. I don't hide, I don't duck, and if I'm wrong, the next time I come on, I go back and I say, hey, you know, I was wrong. You know, obviously, if this was an easy business, everybody would be doing it, and there'd be no issues. But, of course, you and I both know that, unfortunately, nobody's giving away anything for free out there, right? So you got to be on your game. So tell me first, Mark, talk to me about the fixed income market right now. I mean, I don't think there is any market right now, is there?
You know, the fixed income market really has led the demise in the markets. And by that I mean you've seen the high-yield credit markets deteriorate significantly over the last really 3-4 months, well in advance of what you saw this week in the equity market. Your energy-related high-yield bonds have traded down from an aggregate price of, you know, 95 to par to, in some cases, below 50. You have things like Alta Mesa, Chaparral, WTI, NOG, which are all, you know, going concerns, paying coupons, trading anywhere from 45 to 65 cents on the dollar. So the interesting thing is, in a lot of the cases where the stock market has had a major correction, the high yield market has led. So in hindsight, there are a lot of people that could have said, well, it makes sense that this happened. The thing I will tell you is most of the high yield bonds have not recovered, and they're at or close to the lows of Monday or Tuesday, certainly the energy related bonds, and that would lead me to believe that, you know, this tremendous rally we saw the last couple of days, leaving us flat on the week in the equity markets, is probably not sustainable. Again, that's just based on the way the fixed income credit markets have been moving.
So, you know, you look at this whole thing, and we keep hearing the discussion. Now, I'm on record multiple times at every single. Fed meeting, I go, they ain't raising rates. They can't raise rates. They don't have the stones to raise rates. What's your take?
You know, there was a little spigot out of the meeting this week where the New York Fed governor basically said it's probably too early and we have to reconsider easing. Although, because the markets have come back, and they say they're not market-driven, they're more data-driven, we know that's BS. It's about the market. And the fact that we have seen this comeback and we're essentially flat to marginally up on the week of some of the indices, if you are stable over the next couple weeks, they'll probably ease. I think it'd be a horrible move. It sends a horrible signal when you have all these macroeconomic and global problems continue to be very real. What's the point? You keep interest rates where they're at. Wait till you have a more sustainable growth in the top line of companies in the economy, and then you ease. So I think there's some concern that They probably should have eased maybe 6 months ago, before all the China problems start to rear their ugly heads. But now, if they don't ease, it's the right move. If they do ease, they feel like they're pressured to ease. If you put a gun to my head, are they going to ease or not going to ease? I think there are enough knuckleheads that they're going to ease.
Really?
I'm sorry, Titan.
Well, I know what you're
saying. They're going to raise rates very marginally, but it sends the wrong message. And I would hope that you're right, Todd, and that they don't, because that's not what the market needs right now with the rest of the world easing.
No, I mean, look, our interest rates are by, in effect, going up because of what the Fed is doing. So, now, as far as the Fed, now you've been in the business a long time, and you're a veteran again of more of the fixed income.
Well, one other, just on that one topic. The other thing that that clearly puts the market in the camp of don't tighten is the whole currency battles that we've been having with the devaluation of the yuan, with the trade problems we're having. If the U.S. does tighten, and even tightens marginally, that's such a signal for the dollar to strengthen further. And and I just think they really shoot themselves in the foot with all the other currencies devaluing. So that's just another reason why it'd be kind of silly to tighten.
Now, what is your take on the job that the Federal Reserve has done in general?
I continue to feel like markets need to operate, and there has to be a free market. And the fact that you've had all this smoke and mirrors, QE, the twist, buying of securities and distributing on the other hand, I think you refer to it as a Ponzi scheme, which is, that's probably as good a way of stating it as any, because your companies have had abysmal top line growth. The bottom line growth has been very good, and that's because of financial engineering. Because you have rates at zero, they have the ability to issue debt, take stock out. Your earnings per share are obviously better when you decrease the number of shares outstanding. Your capital structure, these corporations, is great because they're issuing at 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, which is historically low. So that's allowed them to do much better on the bottom line, even with no growth on the top line. And I think if you look at that towards China and what China is doing, the U.S. can point their fingers and say, let the free markets take us the way they should and they're supposed to. Well, the U.S. hasn't done that, and China's doing the exact same thing. You can't manipulate markets forever. Eventually, the water rises to the level that it's supposed to be. And I thought we were going to see a little bit bad at the beginning of the week, but then you had the talking heads going after it, and you had them talking about not tightening and doing whatever they needed to do to keep calm in the market. Whereas at some point, you have to let the markets go the direction that they're going to go. And you can even draw this back to 08, 09 when we did all the bailouts. There probably should have been more companies that went the standard Chapter 11 reorg, restructure, versus all the hand of government and the Fed stepping in. So I'm not a big fan of what the Fed's doing, and I think that there'll be a day of reckoning. And it felt like it was early this week. It probably isn't going to be till maybe the fall. But when all the professionals get back on vacation and we look at China, we look at Japan, we look at the Middle East, we look at the problems that supply and demand imbalance and oil has created and all the commodities, then I think there'll be a shakeout. And as ugly and horrible as that'll feel, that's probably the best thing for the next decade.
And we are with Mark Levin, my man, the fixed income expert, and we're going to talk a little gold. We're going to talk a little bit more Fed, but we're going to have Mark for the day today. We're going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
When love runs high.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Mark Levin. So, Mark, you know, I think the Fed has done a horrible job. I think they, butchered everything. I think they've taken away the capitalistic system. I think they're trying to, Obama's trying to turn us into a socialist or Marxism or communism now. I'm just really, I have a really distaste right now for what's going on, because I grew up in free markets. Okay, I grew up, you know, my whole life, it was, you know, if you could buy something for a nickel, sell it for a dime, you made a little money, right? And you could free to roam, and you had guys, you know, entrepreneurs who go out and start with nothing and make billions of dollars. Now you've got a system that every government comes in and intervenes at every moment. I mean, China, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, China's intervened almost every day, okay? And we know what manipulators they are. But, of course, we're no different. We started this, and everybody forgets that Uncle Ben started the currency wars back then, and because he didn't have the balls to raise the rates in 13, he let the market tell him that not to raise them. We see the mess we have. Now, I cannot figure in my way ever that this is going to have a pretty ending. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. You know, I think, you know, as I said, you know, before the commercial break, you know, the markets are going to go the direction that they're supposed to, and this this manipulation that you've had, you know, basically is just prolonging the inevitable. You know, you can fake out, you know, people, you can fake out the markets. You know, what's that line? You can fake some of the people some of the time, and all the people some of the time, but you can never fake out you know, all the people all the time. And you know, and right now, you know, it's a fake out, because you know, we have provided tremendous stimulus into the economy. We've crushed the savers, but clearly the wealthier folks, you know, the wealthier corporations, the marginal corporations have all had, you know, tremendous lifeline due to the Fed and due to the artificial low interest rate environment, you know, that has been created purely by the Fed. So so what's going to happen? Well, you know, at some point, you know, we're not a closed system. At some point, you know, we're going to be you know, forced to compete with, you know, with China, even more so than we already have, forced to compete with mainland Europe, forced to compete with Mexico and Canada. And to the extent that we can control what we can control, but we can't control all these other you know, countries. And if you just, you know, think about what China's doing, whether it's right or wrong, if they devaluate, if they continue to devalue the yuan, the trade imbalance will be such that they'll have a huge competitive edge, and you know, at some point, the Fed's hands will be tied. Even if the economy dictates that they should raise rates, they can't, as I said before, you know, before the commercial break, because you know, that would mean the dollar would go up. We'd be more and more uncompetitive, and you know, everything would go overseas, you know, as it did, you know, 30 years ago. So you're right. You know, what the Fed's doing is myopic. It's certainly helped near term, but do argue that, you know, it's fundamentally going to help our country, our economy, and all classes of people in the longer term, I think, is foolhardy.
Now, you know, you've got, your parents are both still alive, and, you know, they would be normally living on a fixed income type of thing. They'd like to be in, you know, bonds or whatever. What are people like your parents doing in this market? Because there's really no place to go. So unless you want to break into your principal of your money, which is never the entire, that was never the idea that retirees had, was they figured they could take their money and put it in a CD, even at 3 or 4%, and they'd be able to live because they worked hard and saved. What do people do now that are of that age that, you know, aren't earning anymore? They're not working. And now they're going to start spending their money, and they have to, so if they want some type of return, they have to gamble and go into the equity market. What does that mean to you, and what do your folks do?
You know, now we're moving towards a political discussion, and you talk about you know, the policies of the Democrats and the policies of the Republican, and the Democratic policies that have been in place, which have basically kept us, been advocates of the interest rate policy, advocates of, you know, what the Fed has been doing, and who's it crushed? Well, it's crushed, you know, the elderly. It's crushed those on a fixed income. It's crushed the conservative folks that you really, you know, don't have the time, money, or risk aptitude to go into the stock market. So people like my folks have you know, clearly their lifestyle has been cut back dramatically the last four or five, 6 years, because if you have, a couple, 200,000-300,000 in savings, and you got, you're making 5% of your money, 15,000, extra a year, is a big difference between that and zero. So you're taking principal and hoping you don't outlive your principal, but the biggest losers in the in this interest rate policy that's been advocated by the Democrats have been the poor, the lower class, and the elderly, and the biggest winners have been the richer, the upper middle class, and really the rich that have had the ability to take more risk, because when you move the cost of money to zero, you're enhancing people's ability and desire to move out on the risk curve, and the only ones that are going to do that are those that have the ability to lose money. And it's been one directional up until Monday and Tuesday for a better part of the last 2, 3, 4 years. It's been up and away. An interesting discussion I had with my brother, who's a lawyer, a retired lawyer. Now he's a school teacher, and he trades his stocks. And he was telling me how great he's doing. He's making more money trading stocks up until this week, of course, than he did being a lawyer. And what I tried to explain to him is that, did he outperform the market? People think if they're making 10%, 11%, 12%, that they are killing it. 15%. Well, if you look at the aggregate of what the S&P 500 has done, we've been up every single year, since that, 09 debacle. And, it creates, a false sense of security in folks like that. And then a week like this happens, Monday, Tuesday, give them a, how you doing?
Yeah.
And, I said, you might be doing real good now if the S&P at one point was down, 7, 8, 9% early in the week. And I said, if you're only down 3%, you're killing it. But you're probably not pounding your chest. I said, that's the kind of market, that has given everyone a false sense of, brilliance, security, except for the, the poor folks that aren't on a fixed income. So your point of what are the elderly doing? Well, they're cutting back. They're living a much more Spartan lifestyle.
Yeah, and that's too bad, because again, in this country, part of one of the perks, we didn't have all those entitlements, and you worked your whole life to save some dough, and you hoped you'd be able to put it away, and then you'd live on the interest and live on the Social Security, and then you'd be ready to set and go, and you'd whatever you had left, you'd leave to your kids, your grandchildren, and you'd be done. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And now, how are the fixed income, the bond traders doing? Are they making any money these days?
Ever since 08, 09, the ability to take risk has really been diminished at all the major banks. The major players don't have the ability to have multi-billion dollar balance sheets to take advantage of spreads going in, fixed income markets, moving higher. So that hurts them on one side. But the side that's been very, very robust has been the side of issuing paper, corporations issuing debt. You've seen a tremendous proliferation of debt, new issue debt, for your TMT, your telecom, media, technology players, your energy players. Up until the last 6-7 months, all your paper companies. I mean, every company out there, Fortune 500 and smaller, if they haven't issued debt, shame on them, because you've had the greatest opportunity since ever to term out your debt. So what your traditional large fixed income shops will do is they will underwrite debt for Campbell Soup, Procter and Gamble, the auto companies, and all that debt will then be sold to institutional investors, your insurance companies, your mutual funds, your hedge funds, your pension funds, and the fixed income shops. You'll get a generous fee for that. So that side of the business has been very, very good from kind of 09 on. The volume and the secondary trading, you know, that has fallen off, but it's been more than made up by the new issue side.
Gotcha. We are with Mark Levin, the fixed income specialist, but he's got something else he wants to talk about. And when we come back for the break, we're going to get right into it. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more from Mark Levin.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man Mark Levin. So, Mark, I know you've turned from one of the best fixed income traders in the world, and you know, now in your smaller boutique firm, and you know, you're doing some things, but I know you're a big fan of a certain precious metal. Take us through the gold and how you became the golden boy and the golden bug. Okay, tell us what's going on and give us your rationale of wanting to be in the gold market.
Well, Todd, the bad news is that, you know, my average cost of gold and silver is probably 25% higher than the current spot price. You know, that being said, you know, I don't think the reasons for getting in, any of my reasons getting in, have changed. And there's a lot of things that I, you know, have buyer's remorse that I bought over the course of, you know, my career in the fixed income market and the equity market and the private equity market. But I can tell you, I have no remorse about owning it. Certainly, I would have liked my price point to be better, but you know, but I believe more in gold now and silver than really, you know, at any point in the last 4, 5, 6 years. The reasons for owning precious metals continue to be the same. You have a tremendous artificial inflation bubbling in, you know, in all the countries of the world. You have you know, the Fed easing nonstop for 4 or 5 years. Now they might do a marginal tightening, but you know, I think there's a number of people that say they may do QE again if the markets continue to go into turmoil. Clearly, you know, that's the case now in China. You know, China wasn't the factor to the extent they are now 5, 6 years ago. Now, arguably, they're the biggest economy in the world. They're starting to ease. We know Japan's been easing for the last 30 years. Europe is easing. You have currency wars now. You know, currency wars are just, you know, being dictated. They're driving the currencies down to be more competitive, you know, in trade, trade profiling amongst countries. So when you have currencies going down, by definition, what asset class is going to hold up? Well, land, real estate, hard assets. And the only thing that we know for certain is that gold has been a medium of exchange, a barter of exchange between people, between countries, between businesses for the last 5,000 years. And to think that that's going to change is foolish. And, you know, and I just continue to believe that when all is said and done, U.S. interest rates will go higher. Our debt is, you know, how many trillion is it now? I mean, it's just you know, obnoxious, you know, the level of debt that we have and the amount of spending that we're doing here. The same thing is going on in Europe. And if you think about, insurance, everyone has, and it's one interesting way to look at precious metals, gold and silver. You know, everyone has a positive, constructive attitude about having homeowners insurance. You buy your home, your $500,000 home, your $1 million home. You insure it. You hope you never have to use your insurance, but you know, thank goodness it's there in case of robbery, fire, flooding, you to protect your investment, your home. Same thing, you know, to a certain degree with auto insurance and health insurance and life insurance. You're buying it to protect the future, to protect against a catastrophe. And I look at gold and silver as investment insurance. If we continue going on the path that we have of, you know, driving down interest rates, you know, driving down currencies, printing, you know, at the whim of every government's discretion, then at some point you'll have to pay the piper. And if you own 5 or 10% of your portfolio in gold, you can sleep at night knowing that you're protected. If the dollar goes down 25%, your portfolio will be protected to a certain extent. And if it never goes down, well, gold probably stays where it's at, as well as silver, and the 85% of your portfolio goes up. Best example is Greece. You know, people that own the assets in Greece, things in the bank, got devastated. Those that had 10 or 15% of their assets in gold, were protected. Same thing. If you go back in time, all these fiat currencies, they live a finite period of time and then they die, and it's hard to imagine that ever happening to the dollar or the euro or the yen or the yuan or the Canadian dollar. But it's just, it's peace of mind. And a lot of my friends, they'll make fun of me. They say, well, if you're going to do that, you just get guns and butter. But, I'll continue to go down the path of, saying it's prudent to have 5% of your portfolio in gold. I'm a little,
You're a little more than that.
A little more than that because I believe, the world is not a safe place. And I believe that this will be an opportunity like we haven't seen in decades. And if you look at the performance of gold since 2000, I think I forgot what I read, but I believe it's right up there with the stock market.
I've actually put the number at 10% that people should own in gold. Or gold and silver combined, whatever. I'm a believer.
Love it. Yep.
I mean, I'm a believer, but I don't believe it as a currency, and I don't believe it as a hedge, but I do believe it as a hard asset that you should own, and I'm in 100% agreement with you there. Now, my question for you is, do you own paper gold through the ETFs, or do you own physical, or do you own both?
I own them both because, clearly to get to a 10% number, depending on what the wealth number is, it is challenging and difficult to buy all the coins, to put them in a safe at home. I think it's smart to have some, and that's the purest form of gold because there's no tracking. You buy 10, 20, 30, 50,000 of gold coins, and from a tax standpoint, I don't think that there's a tax basis of where you bought and where you sold it. You buy it at a store, you sell it at a store. So from a friction standpoint of buying and selling, the coins are great. From the ability to get in larger quantities quickly, the paper gold is a pretty good proxy for the price performance of gold. And I know if the world becomes a real ugly place, there's people that'll shoot holes in the paper gold and say, is it really gold? And you know, that's a little closer to the guns and butter camp, but I do want a combination of the two.
Well, let me ask you that. And now, are you worried about the paper gold at all? I mean, I'm not saying anything wrong with it, but, you know, we've all seen things, and there has been rumors, you know, that maybe there's not enough gold for what's outstanding. And I'm not saying there is. I have no idea. I'm spewing out rumors and innuendo. But are you worried about the paper gold at all? I mean, does it give you any cause for concern?
There are certainly possibilities and scenarios where the paper gold, you know, could have issues, but I think that, you know, those are real extreme. And I mean, on a continuum, you know, that's three or four, you know, standard deviations away from anything I ever believe could happen. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, if gold moves and moves dramatically, I think, you know, my ability to participate in the paper gold will be 99% of what it is in the real gold.
And again, I'm not saying it is or isn't, because I don't know. But my concern would be simply if somebody's holding your paper gold, it is trackable, right? Because you're buying.
Yeah, absolutely. There's tax and tracking and, you know, all that stuff. Yep.
And number two, and again, listen, I trade the paper gold. I just like to own the physical. But number two is, what happens if, you know, the world does blow up, you know, and the economy does fail, and you say, well, I want to sell my gold, I want my money, and they say, well, we don't have any money to give you. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not at all insinuating that. I'm just curious. You know, you're a gold guy, and I'm just curious as to how far right you've gone.
You know what? You can certainly get there. You can get to a point where you say the only thing that, you know, that's really going to protect you is owning the physical gold in your hands. You can get to the point of the government confiscating, as we continue to build up deficits in Social Security and Medicare, and the deficit, you know, there's a plausible scenario where the government takes haircuts on our IRAs, 401ks, bank accounts, as happened in Greece. In that case, anything that's trackable, anything that's traceable, your paper gold sitting in your Schwab account, your Fidelity account, is just as potentially removable as any stock or any dollar. So your point there, you know, is well taken. In an absolute catastrophe, which isn't out of the realm of possibilities with what's going on in our government, you would wish you had 100% physical gold.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I'm not one of those conspiracy theorists. I don't, you know, but I do have some concerns, and I want to address some of those concerns.
That's a fair point. And anyone feels that is a possibility, and it is, should own a lot more than 10% in gold. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm with you. I agree with you. Look, I'm just saying that I'm playing a little bit devil's advocate, because I do have a theory that you're going to actually like my theory. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I do, you know, I am a big conspiracy guy, right? I do believe in a lot of conspiracies, and I do think they're coming up. So what we're going to do now is we're going to step out here for a break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to discuss this with you, and we're going to wrap up the show talking about the conspiracy theory, and I want to talk to you about why I think silver is probably, for your purposes and for general, is a better play, although I would own both, than gold. But this is the Bubba Show. I'm with Mark Levin, former fixed, well, he still has fixed income, but become the golden boy, as I call him. This is the Bubba Show. Top Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more with Mark Levin. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Mark Levin, the fixed income specialist, and all about good guy. So, Mark, let's talk about this. Now, here's my theory, okay? I think China has been selling a lot of gold, which has been pushing the price down, because obviously we know there's a lot of problems in China. But I believe, actually, because they are a communist country, I think they're selling gold out the front door, but in the meantime, they're buying it all back in the back door, and they're hoarding gold that nobody knows about, right? It's kind of just one of those things, you know. It's on the open market, but in the meantime, they keep buying, because you made one statement, it's hard to get physical gold. And, you know, if you want to go buy, you know, a thousand, you know, 10,000 other gold, you can buy all you want. But you want to go buy $1 million, $2 million, it isn't so easy to just go out and buy a couple million dollars worth of physical. And I think that they're buying it through the back end because they can do that. And I think they're preparing and almost trying to, you know, make the currencies collapse to make that gold worth all that much more money. Any thought to that theory?
You know, I've been on the bandwagon that China has an ultimate goal to displace the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency and make a combination, you know, of other currencies, including the yuan, reserve currencies, to eliminate the world's dependency on the dollar. I think that their goal is to be, you know, the strongest financial company in the financial country in the world. They're well on their way. And one of the ways to get there is to have their currency backed by gold. And if they can continue to accumulate gold and get to a point where there actually is a percentage of the gold that's backed by the yuan, whereas we just print as much as we want, whenever we want, and at some point, you would hope that, you know, not you would hope, you would expect other countries to challenge us.
I think, but I think that was a story, an old story, you know, 5 years ago. It was the big thing, and everybody was panicking. And, you know, I know one thing for sure. Whoever is a reserve currency, I mean, England, they live a fine life. They don't have a reserve currency.
Yeah.
And, you know, and whether or not it's backed by gold or not, you know, again, that's, you know, Western versus Keynesian. And, of course, I think they both have flaws. I think Keynesian has a lot more flaws in it than Western, because, you know, Keynesian, they like just like keep pushing the barrel down the road maybe it'll go away. You know, the Keynesians like to put a Band-Aid on a wound that needs a tourniquet. That's my saying. But so now, as we look,
and I'm not saying that's the right way for China to go, but power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and they have, you know, it seems like a goal to control everything, and one of the things that you would think is in their gunshot is more control over the currency markets, and they could do that by continuing to accumulate more and more gold.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, look, they had a lot of problems themselves. I think what's happening now is taking away from what they were trying to do, if you are correct, because I think they ran into trouble. You know, they manipulated the copper for years around $3, and they finally ran out because, you know, you were allowed to borrow money against copper, and of course that caused a problem. They have the hidden cities, which is another problem. But again, I don't disagree with that. I think that their shot is to be the world power, and, you know, at some point they might be. But I think we've gone from 4 times the size of China to probably 7 times the size of China right now. And again, that could change tomorrow. And of course, we've done a great job of creating a marvelous mess here on our own. So, in my opinion, the whole world is full of crap right now with what they're doing, because I think it can only lead to disaster. But so now back to your gold theory. Now, you know, so if you get gold, you know, the problem I have with gold and why I like silver better is if the scenario plays out that we do have to use a metal as a currency type situation, okay? If you walk into a store with the 100-ounce bar of gold worth, you know, $50,000, you got change? I mean, right? Who's going to give you the money? You know what I mean? I mean, if you're going to use it, and again, I get it, and I'm not saying it's not the right thing. I'm just curious, is what do you do? And that's why I think silver, the thing I like about silver better, first of all, it's a little cheaper, so it'll be easier to trade for services if that becomes the case, and I don't think it will, but again, but it's also an industrial metal, which gold is really just a jewelry, right? I mean, you know, I know what it is. I know it's backed by the gold. It used to be backed by the gold standard, but that's why I like silver a little bit better, but I think both are equal of value to own as a portion of any portfolio. What are your thoughts?
I like them both. I think that they'll move together. I think that there's a good chance that the beta on silver is a lot higher going up, just like it was on the way down. And as gold moves up, you know, silver will move up at a much greater rate. So I'm absolutely on board with silver. Silver is an industrial metal, so if you have serious economic problems, some of the demand side of silver being used as a industrial component diminish, but I think they'll be more than made up by the the precious metal monetary, monetary side, just like gold. But I really don't think you'd go wrong with either, and that's why I own them both.
Yeah, and again, I don't blame you for owning them both. I mean, I think that again, I think everybody should own a little bits and portions of again, a well-rounded portfolio is much better than having a not well-rounded portfolio.
A good way to own both, for your callers and listeners, is a Central Fund of Canada. A CEF is the ticker. It's 100% gold and silver. It's in the I believe it's in the Bank of Canada. Yes, they're gold and silver bullion. At least 85%. At any time must be in the form of bullion, and it trades not with anywhere near the liquidity of GLD, SLV, SIV, IVR. But the interesting thing is, because of the closed end fund, it trades based on supply and demand, and you have an NAV. Versus a price, and the price that you buy it right now is about a 7% discount to the NAV, and the NAV is very, very transparent. There's nothing opaque about it. There's a price for silver and a price for gold, and you're buying it at 94 cents on the dollar. I own that as well. That's an interesting thing for your listeners to look at, because it's I've seen the discount as much as 12 or 13% when things really get out of whack. I've never seen it traded at a premium in the last couple of years.
So, as we look, so we got a couple of minutes left. What is your prognosis? I know you think the market's going lower. I know you think it's going to collapse. What's going to happen in your eyes? How do you see this whole thing playing out through the eyes of Mark Levin?
Next week, if you put a gun to my head, I would say that we'll trade off, but we'll probably have similar price path to this week. You have a couple down days, couple up days, net in the week. I would expect us to be down. Then once we get past Labor Day, I think September could be real choppy. I think the problems in China, which has really been the engine of worldwide growth for the last several years, is no longer the engine. They have their own problems, and that's going to fall into all the other areas of the world that really were using them as the bright light. So Greece is still small. It's a problem that could bleed into Italy and Portugal and Spain. Your worldwide growth is anemic at best, and what has to happen is a shakeout. What has to happen is you really need to curtail spending. You need to again, putting on the political hat. I think that what has happened in the country here in the U.S. the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years is really a shame, because our budget deficit continues to go up. We're spending. We have monster entitlement programs, and frankly, we just can't afford it anymore. We can't afford to continue to borrow to pay. And if you think about it, we're borrowing, and we may have talked about this, Todd, offline. We're borrowing from China. China's our biggest lender. We're borrowing from China to pay other countries, to help other countries in the military. And a very controversial point has been the whole, Israel and the Middle East, and at what point you stop paying Saudi Arabia and a number of these other countries.
We'll have to pick this up another time, my man, but I think they call that a Ponzi scheme. But we can't, unfortunately...
Well, we can't keep borrow money to pay our allies.
I think they call it a Ponzi scheme, but this has been Mark Levin. Mark, thanks so much, man. It's always great to have you on, and I'm glad I was able to find you out of that. That retirement life is tough, man, and you did good on the fixed income, so you took care of yourself. Mark Levin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
This is the Bubba Show.
Best of luck, everybody.
Todd, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.